So as Shannon said, I'm here to talk about the Soil Information System, or SIS, and as I would refer to it as Agricultural Information Infrastructure, because if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, right? It's all about the soils in this case. So I'm going to talk about Agricultural Information Infrastructure, the SIS, what is it, and then also an application for using this technology as the next generation for the digital NRCS three-dimensional survey. So this is probably to this group, this is not a surprise, but I think it's pretty well founded that by far in a crop situation, the soil is the dominant factor causing any sort of variability. It's the primary factor, and there's all sorts of secondary and tertiary factors that play from the soil with respect to disease and management. But if you understand what the soils are on each field, then you're going to have a great head start. And you know, for folks who aren't as familiar with soils and soil variability, one of the things that I always like to point out is that, you know, it maybe goes without saying to this group, but that the soils are unique for every field. Someone will say, well, I know what the soils are in this valley. I have, you know, I have a soil survey, it's one of eight soils are likely to be on this field, so they feel like they know the soils. But you can have exactly the same soils on adjacent fields, and how you manage those would be completely different due to that pattern. It could be more heterogeneous, it could be more contiguous. You might have the same percent of one type of soil, but it's the southwest corner versus being distributed all over the place. So if you do not understand what your soils are, then you're going to be forced to essentially manage to the lowest common denominator, which is not good for the economy, and it's not good for the ecology. So one of the things I start off with, because probably most of you are familiar with Veris or EM technology, EC technology, and it seems to be the you know, it's the go-to default for sensing technologies and making soil maps. But I always like to point out, and because you probably don't hear this very much, but an EC or an EM map is not a soil map. It is not. And it's too easy to just run a sensor over a field and go, oh, look at all this great pattern that I've got. And then, well, let's go target our core sampling or monitoring sites or any sort of other observations based on this pattern that you collect when you go out. Well, but what most people never do is they won't bother to go out at a different time of the year and make that map. You know, try that map in the fall, try it in the spring. I guarantee you that pattern is going to change. But do you think your soil texture map changes? Absolutely not. You think your all your fertility maps and all the observations that you're making, where you go and you sample in that pattern from the EC map, and then you go and extrapolate, you're making an inaccurate soil map. And so, and I think a lot of that comes from the misconception. You know, I don't know how many of you have ever done a saturated paste extract, you know, in graduate school, and how complex that is. And you're actually measuring the EC of the soil. It's very different than the measurement from a sensor, which is a bulk measurement. And it's a function of water, it's a function of salts, compaction, mineralogy, organic matter, CEC. All of those things in various combinations have an impact on that reading. And just as an example, you can see here on this one, and we've mapped thousands and thousands of fields, and we can tell you this is true. Same reading, 42 here, 42 here, 42 here, but three completely different profiles on the same field with the same reading. So you can't be fooled into this. You have to use these sensors. They're very important sensors. They're critical, in fact, I believe, at this stage with technology, but they have to be used in sequence with other technologies and other sensors to validate ground truth, essentially what it is you're seeing. So start off with that. So the Soil Information System, what is it? It is not about a particular set of sensors or technologies. It is a system in its truest sense. It combines hardware and software and algorithms and databases that have been compiled over years and years and years from around the world. So we go out and we collect this information, understand what the sensors are telling us and how that translates into soil information. It's the result of 250,000 hours of science, engineering, and software development over a decade and a half. So it isn't just, it's really about the software and how it is able to take information that's collected from a sensor understand through algorithms what that sensor just measured, and then guides the next observation based on what you just found. Because it's really inefficient in a commercial sense, not in a research sense. But if you need to map tens of thousands of acres, you can't wait for field capacity, right? So one of the arguments about EC or EM is, well, wait till the soil's at field capacity, then you can distinguish it from the other parts of the field. Well, number one, in a field with varying soils, your field capacity is going to occur at different times in that field. But also, you can't wait to map 10,000, 20,000 acres for the right field capacity. So the soil information system allows you to go out, take these observations, and go out to the field, collect all the information you need, and leave, and you're done. Because you can't afford to have to go back out, wait for this, wait for that. It just becomes totally inefficient, and the cost per acre is too high, and no one will buy it. This is an early picture from probably 1997. That's me standing over a pit. You can see it was very rudimentary at the time, lots of wires sticking out and soldering irons and junk out in the field. That was at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Started the company in 99 and then developed the technology for 4 years and then started mapping commercially in 2003. And then in 2013, my company was acquired by Trimble, which is where I now work as we distribute that technology globally. So the word system, I want to emphasize this aspect of the soil information system, that it is objective, it's repeatable, and it's transferable. So it's objective because when you push these sensors in the ground and you pull them out, you're going to get the same observation, no matter who does it. It's going to be the same over and over, as opposed to taking a core, trying to decide where you're going to analyze the core. Of course, you know, we've all done this, right? Trying to figure out what the texture is, what all this. That's very subjective, and it's fine if you have experts. But when you're trying to collect information, it needs to be objective. It needs to be repeatable, meaning. I can do it and then hand it over to someone else in the same room and they're going to get the same measurement, right? So there's not that variability between people. And it's transferable, meaning that if I collect information on soil conditions on this field or in this area, I can compare that to somebody in another field in another area. So I have apples to apples comparisons in terms of things like soil health or productivity, compaction, all of those things. So it's consistent. And that's all of those things are really critical for things like baselining, decision support systems, running models, right? If you're running models and decision support systems, you have to have it be objective, repeatable, and transferable. Otherwise, the models break down, decision support breaks down, and as far as inventory is concerned. And we'll touch more on the inventory piece later. So I encourage you all, you can go to the Trimble Ag website and watch a short 5-minute video on how this information is collected. Normally I would do that, but in the interest of time, I'm going to skip over it. But suffice to say, it's if you haven't seen the CIS collecting information, then some of this might be difficult to process in terms of the maps I'm going to show you. But essentially what happens is you have a process where you go out with what we call a surfer, which is the ability to collect very high resolution vertical GPS. So that's a critical element, centimeter level vertical accuracy, in combination with an electromagnetic sensor. You could use an EC sensor. The system works with Varis, Dulum, EM38s. We prefer to use a Dulum EM system sensor. We find that to be the most robust and the least drifty in terms of its consistent sensor measurements, but it can work with any of them. And then we have a push system, essentially, that pushes a penetrometer into the ground 5 feet, pulls it out, takes 60 seconds, go to another location, push it in, pull it out. But what that gives you is a continuous vertical profile, which is really important, of course, for things like water transport, storage, depth and thickness of soil horizons, and I'll show some examples of that. But you can see that the soil information system can be mounted on many different kinds of systems, tractor mounted, kind of a crawler system. In Australia, they put them all on these trucks so that the surfer and the diver are all in the same system. Sometimes the surfer will be on an ATV that runs separate from the diver. But you have this hydraulic system that pushes this penetrometer probe into the ground. And the software is the key there, as I mentioned earlier, because it's guiding the operator through that field. You do the first step with the surfing, so you get very high resolution topographic information and electromagnetic signature that are combined in real time as the system is moving through the field. And then based on the resolution of the map that you're going to make, the SIS software will guide you to different parts in the landscape and will do things like, hey, you know, all the 3 to 5% south facing slopes are probably going to have very similar soils, but you can, bam, quickly find that out and confirm that. You can find inclusions. It's just a really good way of objectively and repeatedly and transferably making those soil maps. So, scale. Talk about scale. You know, we're all familiar with the NRCS soil survey, probably. And, you know, I can say this. I know Shannon was a soil surveyor, and I've talked to many other people about this. But the soil survey was never intended, nor is it appropriate to use it for precision agriculture. But you would be surprised, maybe not, how many folks in agriculture, at universities, in government, or in companies will take a Surgo data layer and say, oh, I've got 10-meter soil information now, because digitally they might have 10-meter soil information. But the resolution of the information that went in there is not adequate at all for decision support. You can see this is every time we do this, you can take a field mapped as the same soil, and we know this intuitively, but look at the sand distribution. Look at the plant available water holding capacity, the compaction, the root restriction. These are all different patterns. These are all maps that are, if you want to manage within the field, between the fences, and not be forced to manage to the lowest common denominator, you have to have a field scale map for every field. So another thing that the soil information system enables is the busting of the paradigm that we have a soil map. And we get that also from the NRCS thinking, the polygons, the jigsaw puzzle, that here's soil A, here's soil B, here's soil C. You read the description and it gives you the profile. Well, there is no such thing as a soil map. And from an analytical perspective, in terms of the dimensions of the information for analytical purposes, as well as the decision support, hey, I don't want to necessarily irrigate in the same pattern that I'm managing my chemistry, that I'm managing my fertility. Sometimes those are different patterns. But the soil information system is the first technology to allow you to disaggregate all of those different soil maps into unique maps. So the clay distribution map is going to be looking from the nitrate, difference in the zinc, the magnesium, from the PAW. All of those maps are different maps. And so to say that you have a soil A or a soil B really deadens any sort of analytics you can do, because if you have yield, for example, and you're trying to look at how soil relates to yield, and you're using a Surgo map or a non-accurate map, you're going to have too much noise in your analytics, and it's not going to make any sense. When you intuitively know that this property has more of an impact on that crop because of all the research the folks do at the research scale, right? So you can figure out what the relationship between pH and yield of a particular crop is, right? And, in our research plot, the size of the room, the field the size of this room, we know that you can affect yield by doing this or doing that, and you write your research papers. Well, what happens when you have 10,000 acres and you don't know the pH of the field? What good is that research if you can't apply it? So this allows you to create that arc between the information and the knowledge that's obtained over years and years of research. So another thing that you saw this on one of the other maps, but here's a field. It's a 40-acre field. According to the NRCS map, or if you go to a lab and you say, what's my soil texture? It's all silt loam or sandy loam. Okay, well, that's great. It is. It actually is all sandy loam. But you know from the texture triangle, where is it? Look how that percent sand varies from 68 to 55%. And if you were to push this probe in the ground as you're going down, you'd see the, you know, you'd see it move around like this kind of thing. But the difference in water holding capacity, the difference in transport and storage of chemicals and fertilizer and water, is dramatically different around this field, but it's all the same. So if you're modeling and you pull this information in, it's not resolute enough. The information is not resolute enough. The soil information system changes that. Just another example. You have surface, subsurface, clay, sand. In order to help the humans understand these maps, we end up breaking them down into layers. But it's not necessary from an analytical perspective or a modeling perspective to do that. You know, so we can say, oh, the surface, we'll take the, and here's the average, the word average again. You take the average in the top 18 inches and the average below that, which is fine because that's how we can oversimplify it. But again, when it comes of modeling or any sort of decision support, just know that there's much more richness in that information than what I can show you visually in a two-dimensional map. Water conductivity, so hydraulic conductivity, drainage potential, products, you can see the different patterns. Compaction, this is really important, of course. And one of the things that the SIS is different, I mean, how many of you ever used a penetrometer for compaction? A few of you, about half of you. So you've probably used an ASAE, American Society of Ag Engineers penetrometer. Maybe you've done it by hand. Maybe you've pushed it on some sort of a vehicle. But the penetrometer that's used in agriculture is a 30-degree tip, and there's a rod. The force is being measured above ground, and this thing is pushed into the ground, or it's pushed into the ground. And so my first project for my PhD was analyzing the ASAE penetrometer versus a different type of penetrometer, which is what we use, which is the American Society of Testing Materials, which has a 60-degree tip. It measures the friction as well as the tip force, but the most important difference is that the measurement is made downhole, down at the bottom. Because what happens when you push a penetrometer in, the ASAE penetrometer, and the measurement, the force, the load cells up top, you're not just measuring the force on the tip. You're measuring the friction along the rod as you push it in. And even if it's recessed, even if there's a recess on the bar, you are absolutely getting friction from the rod. And so what you think is compaction is actually just friction from the rod being pushed down. Yeah, it's getting harder to push in, but it's not just from the force on the tip. So the soil information system allows us to get a in-situ, continuous, vertical, actual compaction, or soil density. Because sometimes it's not a verb, compaction, sometimes it's a noun, right? In the Midwest, we always think of compaction as a verb, but sometimes it's just denser soil. So one of the things, now that you get actual in-situ compaction, you can start to look at and connect to things like root penetrability, right? So you can say, okay, corn, starts to get stressed at 350 PSI in terms of root penetrability. Potatoes, maybe it's 250, maybe, different crops. So what it allows you to do is create a map that says, on this field, what is the depth at which my roots will reach stress with respect to penetration? So you can make a map like this, which is called depth to root restriction. And so you can see that on this part of the field, you have no root restriction, right? All the way down to 48 inches. And there's parts of the field where you're going to hit that root restriction near the surface. So what would this be useful for? It'd be useful for, if you're not ripping, it'd be useful for managing the root zone. Right? So why apply water to a part of the field where the root zone, where it's not going to get, or the roots aren't going to get? Or you could use this map for variable ripping, because a lot of folks will just go out and rip the whole field. Right? This is very expensive. It's very time consuming. You pull up material from below the compacted zone that maybe you don't want to pull up. So this is another useful part of the soil information system. Maps you can't get anywhere else using any other technology, and that's an absolute fact. Soil layer thickness. So probably soil scientists appreciate this, but the thickness of a soil horizon is probably the most important aspect of it, right? You could go out and get the same exact texture. Hey, let's go out and take samples at 10 inches, right, all across your field. Come back and you get your soil texture, and you're trying to infer water holding capacity or whatever it is you're trying to do. Well, what you don't realize when you do that is that maybe that layer is 20 inches thick over here, it's 10 inches thick over here, and it's 40 inches thick over there. Completely different. Same soil, different thickness. completely different management. So the soil information system gets you that thickness of those horizons, which is also something that you're not going to get practically speaking. I mean, maybe some of you were enslaved graduate students like I was, and you went and you mapped the field that was this size, and you took 50 cores, and you sat there all day, and you chopped them up, and you write your paper, and you think, hey, you know, this is great. I understand the soil, and so I understand the relationship between the soil and the plant, but again, what happens when it's a 10,000-acre farm? It doesn't work. So you have to be able to get that soil information system in a practical way. pH, surface, subsurface, organic matter. Okay. This is a little bit expansion on the depth, right? I just mentioned this a little bit, but when taking soil samples for chemistry or fertility, you don't want to sample by depth. You want to sample by horizon. These are two locations in the same field, and this is actual data from the penetrometer. Up here is percent, here's depth, and clay is red, silt is orange, and sand is yellow. So you can see the percent at any depth at 12 inches, you have 60% clay, etc. You can see what percent. So you can see down here at 24 inches, right? So if someone were to say, let's go down and take a sample at 24 inches, you would think that these are two totally different soils, but they're not. They're the same soil. Remember wavy boundaries, right? So you've got to sample by horizon, and the CIS will tell you where to go sample. It'll tell you which profiles are most representative of that soil type, and then it will tell you where to go. And when you pull that core, because, like, let's face it, we don't have sensors for everything. I know we're going to have here talk today of new technologies or evolving technologies on ways to measure direct chemistry and fertility. And as those sensors are advanced, we will plug them into the soil information system. And eventually we'll get to direct chemistry where you don't have to take samples, except for legal reasons or whatever. But it's really important. By far the biggest error in soil mapping in a conventional way is the location of the observation. And folks might say, hey, you know, let's go, you know, they might use topographic, you know, let's go to the top of the slope, the middle of the slope, the bottom of the slope, but the inclusions are everywhere. If you're going to take a statistically insignificant number of observations, which is what always happens unless you're an enslaved graduate student in soils, you darn well better make sure that that's in a known location that has an understood spatial context. What percent of the field is like this observation and where? And if you don't do that, then you're really in trouble, because folks will put a moisture sensor in the ground, or they'll take a fertility sample or something like that, and they don't know that they're taking it from an anomalous location, right? And, well, geez, you know, why isn't my irrigation technology working? The soil moisture says this, but the grower looks at the plants and they're all wilting. He's like, screw it, I'm going to turn the water on. And the reason is because they don't have an accurate representation of how that soil water is distributed in the field. So where you take that sample, the depth, is a really critical piece of what the soil information system offers. So that no matter what you do after that, with whatever lab data or sensor after that, you got to make sure you're testing in the right place. Soil moisture. So when you have a soil moisture sensor, what is it telling you? It's telling you the volumetric moisture content, right? Well, what does that mean? Let's say we have a sensor in the ground and it shows you have a 20% volumetric moisture content. Well, here's the same profile, right? We were just looking at. The blue is the moisture content at the time. We have a moisture sensor in this, a moisture sensor in the probe as well as all the other sensors. But you can see if you go at 20% moisture, percents up here, and you go down at 12 inches, you can see you're in this zone, which is unavailable. So this is unavailable, this is plant available, and this is unavailable, free water. Gravity's dominating it, for those of you, the three water states of soil. Well, 20% at 12 inches is that water is not available to the crop. Keep going down, 20% at 24 inches is also not available to crop, but it's on the other side of the Goldilocks spectrum, right? And in the middle of that is where your water is available. For 20% means something completely different. So if you don't understand what the plant available water holding capacity is of your soil, where that sensor is, what good is that? The 20% means something completely different. So you have to have that context with the soils to be able to make sense of all the measurements. But if no one's checking, no one knows. And so people do this. People do these things, and no one bothers to challenge it because it's not efficient to go out and keep making these measurements. But you've got to have this stuff. So then you can also do really neat things like combine the depth to root restriction map I showed you. So on this field, the roots aren't going to go, even though the roots will go to 48 inches, on this field, they're not going to go to 48 inches everywhere. So what is the plant of root zone plant available water? That's like taking the zone where the roots are going to be, taking the plant available water, and then you make this root limited plant available water. So if you want to do irrigation design, you want to look at where the roots are actually going to be. So the SIS allows you to make those decisions. Also, the good thing about the SIS is I alluded to before about the statistically insignificant number of soil observations that are typically made. Well, if you're coring or you're digging pits, you probably, unless, again, you're a graduate student or you're doing research at a university, you're not taking a statistically significant number of observations. You're just not. With the sensor, you can, and that's one of the sliced bread aspects. You're going out, it takes 60 seconds to take one continuous vertical profile. So you can go out and you can take 30, 40, 50 on a 100-acre field in half a day, right? So now you're overcoming this threshold of statistical significance. What that allows you to do is not just look at a map, which isn't spatially accurate anyway, but allows you to look at the distribution from the histogram. So now, finally, you can analyze soils in a statistical space and then transfer it to spatial space. So you look at the distribution. I want to do my irrigation zones on this field. You can imagine just being able to do this, move this over, move this over, move this over. Let's cut it off here. Let's treat all of this like this, right? I mean, those are the decisions that allows you to make those sorts of choices and work in statistical space, not just inaccurate map space. Soil health, talked about baselining and inventories. Well, the soil information systems get many of the elements of something that you'd have a soil health index. You depth of root restriction, cation exchange capacity, root zone PAW, compaction, organic matter, et cetera, et cetera. And you can combine all of those and create this soil health index. That's another really great opportunity with the soil information system. So I'm going to kind of end on this one concept, which is the next generation of 3D soil surveys. So I talked about the soil information system being objective, repeatable, and transferable. But what I think, we're making some movement in this space. But think about this: being able to go up to a representative profile as determined by the NRCS, right? So instead of opening the book or downloading Surgo and looking at this, objective profile or a subjective profile, you could have a digital signature for each representative profile. So you go out, I'm going to skip ahead to this slide real quick, but this is a procedure we use to develop our algorithms for converting the digital sensor information into soil information. You dig a pit and you poke holes in the ground with a sensor, dig the pit, and you excavate towards where the actual probe went in the ground. So there's no wavy boundary error. Like if you push the sensor in the ground and you take an adjacent core, even if it's that far away, you still have some issues with cross-calibration just because of the boundary layers. But if you want to do calibration work, you would dig this pit at the representative profile, and you're able to push these sensors in the ground. We also have an imagery sensor that we're not offering with Trimble right now, but it's technology that we've developed. It's not on the market yet, but it gives you a real-time continuous vertical image. So imagine for every representative profile having the signature, the digital signature, like a fingerprint, because each one is going to be unique, right? Each representative profile will have a unique signature from all the sensors that are going down in that profile. So you take that, you get that information, and then what you do is you say, go out into the field And every time you push that sensor in the ground, the algorithm, because these are algorithms we use where they basically match fingerprints, it's like fingerprint matching, they align them up. Every time you push that sensor in the ground afterwards, it would tell you what percent of each soil type you're in, right? So it may be, it's never going to be exactly, right? You're always going to have some mixture of soil types as they transition between one another. But the benefit of doing this is that the knowledge that's in the soil survey is tremendous. You know, what does it mean? And all the research that's done at universities. Like I said, if you know what the relationship is between pH, organic matter, yield, zinc, you know, phosphorus, all those things are always, they're always learning, but you're knowing that. But the scale of that knowledge doesn't match the industry. You can't get that information at a practical industrial scale. So if you could go out, you would be able to create an arc, essentially, between all of the knowledge that exists at the research scale and at the scale of suitability, you know, soil suitability for all sorts of things that the NRCS soil survey is used for. But you would be able to create an arc between all of that knowledge and the high resolution information at the field scale. And I think that's where this is going. I hope that's where this is going. For my PhD research on the imaging system, I made the cover of the SSSA journal. That was back in November, December 2000, so that was kind of cool. Since I'm at the Soil Science Society of America meeting, I have to show that. Take home messages. EC and EM sensor output is not a soil map. Remember that. There is no such thing as a soil map. Soil profile depth and thickness information is really important, and that the SIS is objective, repeatable, and transferable, which makes it ideal for baselining, decision support, and inventory. And that's it.